So we're here today for the Youth Services Committee meeting, and I'm going to call the meeting to order, and we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Place your right hand over your heart and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. And I think somebody's going to take care of board member roll call for us.
Yes, I will do that for you. Gloria Alvarado.
Here.
Trung Lee. John Luker. Doug Mangione.
Here.
Carlos Oregon.
Here.
Kathy Boyd.
Here.
And we do have quorum, Chair.
Okay, and at this time, members of the public may address the Youth Committee regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on or off agenda items unless authorized by the law. Do we have any public comment?
We did not receive any requests to speak. However, there are members of the public present. If there are any members of the public that would like to address the committee, please use a hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. Again, if there are any members of the public that would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. And I see none, Chair.
Okay. So we're going to move right into our action items, number 5. And I think Karma might take this from me about the apprenticeship policy.
Here we go. I guess it'll help if I hit mute. Okay, Desiree, can we go to the apprenticeship policy page? So, committee, the apprenticeship policy is a new policy for our Workforce Development Board. Prior to this policy, we did not have any. We currently don't have any apprenticeships. And when we're talking about apprenticeships, we're talking about non-traditional apprenticeships. So certainly in the Orange County community, there are the trade apprenticeships that exist and are in the available to the community. But what we're talking about in terms of this policy is the trade apprenticeships plus non-traditional apprenticeships. We would like to develop non-traditional apprenticeship opportunities in our community, but we have to establish how will they work? How will we set them up? How do we pay for them? With apprenticeships, there is the opportunity to utilize WIOA money to support the financial side of the apprenticeship, meaning that we can potentially cover the training part of it and or cover the pay part of it. As OJT dollars are technically eligible for an apprenticeship opportunity, and ITA is as well. So this policy establishes when it comes to an apprenticeship, how do we handle apprenticeship opportunities? How do we develop them? How do we document them in the CalJOP system once they are developed? And then of course, what are the standards to pay for apprenticeships? Unlike OJTs, apprenticeships last often longer than 6 months. So right now our OJTs are typically 6 months. An apprenticeship can last several years. And so because our funding is kind of restricted, we're given funding annually with a 2-year expiration date on that funding, we can't set up apprenticeships that last multiple years. So what we have to do as a workforce area is establish our apprenticeship policy and how those payments can be set up and what are the reimbursement rates. The other thing about apprenticeships is that because they last so long, there's quite a bit of money that could be paid out to the employer. And so we have to establish a standard for our local workforce system on how will that work for us. So this is our very first apprenticeship policy. We have no apprenticeships in Orange County in terms of apprenticeships that are registered with the California Department of Apprenticeship Standards that we are currently offering in Orange County through our workforce system. And so this allows us to start establishing non-traditional apprenticeships and how they are paid. This also supports the traditional apprenticeships. So if we are able to set up an apprenticeship with a trade organization, how do we reimburse that trade organization for that apprenticeship opportunity that apprenticeship opportunity created? So with that, we want to request the board support in approving our apprenticeship policy and allowing us to make non-substantiated changes when necessary. In addition to just setting up an apprenticeship, it also establishes pre-apprenticeship programs. So the law allows us to develop pre-apprenticeship programs where we can either develop them with an employer, we can and develop them with an education entity to prepare people for the apprenticeship itself. So this policy not only establishes developing an apprenticeship opportunity, but also a pre-apprenticeship opportunity. And then, like I said, it basically supports when a service provider is offering that to one of our WIOA participants, what codes do they list in the CalJobs system? Are there any questions or concerns about this policy?
I'll just have a comment, Doug Mangione. We have obviously a traditional, as IBW, we have a traditional apprenticeship, construction apprenticeship registered with the DAS and the DOL in Orange County. But we are a traditional construction related apprenticeship, and all of the items, business involvement, on the job training, related instructions, rewards, this is describing basically a traditional apprenticeship program. And to Carmen's point, all of the trades apprenticeship programs are multi-year. The student either goes one night a week. You typically get a semester every 6 months. So it is difficult. We've worked with the workforce board years ago, getting support services. That was someone first coming in. They could buy boots, tools, get them started, gas cards if they needed. And that was fairly successful. We are trying to develop pre-apprenticeships. We have, Karma, I know you've met with us. We have the MC3 program, which is run by the National Building Trades. And we currently have classes at Saddleback High School, right up the road from you guys, and Rancho Santiago, which is IBW and the Carpenters LEA. That's our sponsor educational group. But, you know, we'd be glad to, you know, we're trying to help. You've had conversations with Ernesto and us, anything we can do, and we're all involved in this. And the one thing everyone needs to understand, these construction apprenticeships are what we call jointly managed. So we are a trust that's contractors, half the contractors, they have half the board, and the union, the workers have half the board, but it's a separate entity from my organization, Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and from our contractors, which are National Electrical Contractors Association. This is a separate trust. And sometimes, just to fill you all in, when you're dealing with us, people come to me and go, hey, your apprenticeship, it's actually not my apprenticeship. We have to go through a trust, and we have standards with the DAS. So it does get complicated with us, but we're willing to reach out, Karma, and try and do something with you folks, because we know it's important to you. It's important to us locally. We want to get young people out of the local colleges and local high schools into our programs and get them a leg up. But I'm very interested in non-traditional, and I think here's an opportunity for other industries to kind of emulate what the trades have been doing for 100 years, and that's train your own folks for your job. You know, we don't educate just to educate and figure out where you want to go. We educate, and they actually work in our industry for 30 years. So anyway, just a comment, just to fill folks on the board in on how these things work. They're complicated, and I know starting non-traditional is not something that normally business will partner with this other group or partner within itself. So anyway, that's just, I just wanted to bring all that up. Thank you, Carmen.
Thank you, Doug. And then I agree. I want to second what Doug was saying. I'm really excited about the non-traditional pre-apprenticeship programs that we might be able to start. So any other questions or comments before we ask for a move to approve? Okay. Would somebody move to approve?
Move. So moved.
Second.
So we have a move to approve in a second. You got that, Desiree?
Yes, and I need to do a roll call because we are virtual.
Okay.
Gloria Alvarado?
Yes.
Trung Lee? John Luker? Doug Mangione?
Yes.
Carlos Oregon?
Yes.
Kathy Boyd?
Yes.
And that is majority chair.
Perfect. So moving on from the action item number 5, we have action item number 6, which is an events policy, and there's an attachment, and I believe somebody's taking that for me too.
Yes, so the next item is a policy for conference meeting training and event requests. So often in our workforce community, our service providers have relationships that are well established and may have had those relationships for quite some time. And so a lot of times, because of those relationships, they go out and do speaking engagements and talk about programs and services that they're offering as a third party organization for some of the county or for some of the county departments like ours. The challenge is that sometimes we're unaware of it. We are completely unaware that an organization may be out in the community talking about our programs, or we're unaware that they already have a seat at the table. And so what this policy allows us to do is kind of get ahead of that, because I think that it's often a surprise to us when we find out that someone has been sitting in a committee or meeting with different chambers that we were not aware of and that we were meeting with them too. And as a result, it's causing confusion in the community about the difference between who we are and our service providers. And that often that people don't understand that we're one and the same. Most of the time, those relationships need to be with our level. So that way, regardless of the service providers, those relationships continue on despite procurement cycles. And so the intent of this policy is to really establish when service providers are going out in the community that they're making us aware of it, so that and that we're approving it, because we don't want to duplicate efforts, but we also want to be in control of our message to the community. And so this policy allows us to do that. In addition to that, often there are conferences like Meeting of the Minds and NOB and other gigantic forums where we're invited and service providers are invited to provide demonstrations. Again, we're not aware that they're doing it on our behalf, and we'd love to know that they are. So this allows us to kind of get ahead of that and maybe even work together to help develop the narrative in the community about who we are and what we do. So essentially, this policy is to do that. And I'm asking for this committee to consider this policy to allow us to approve that it goes up to the executive committee and full board, and then to allow us to make non-substantiated changes if needed.
Great. Does anybody have any questions or comments before we move? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. So should I get some move to approve possibly?
So move.
Second.
Alvarado.
Gloria Alvarado.
And correct. Doug Mangione, second.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so we'll start with the roll call vote. Gloria Alvarado?
Yes.
Trung Lee? John Luker? Doug Mangione?
Yes.
Carlos Oregon?
Yes.
Kathy Boyd?
Yes.
And that is majority chair.
Perfect. So moving on from action item number 6, we have some information items, and I think we're going to have Karma lead us through staff talking about those.
All right. I am going to go ahead and turn it over to Maggie Lopez to provide us an update on items number 7 and items 8 through C on item 8.
Hi, Desiree. Can you make that a little bit bigger, please? Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So here is the report for our Ready, Set, OC program for the in-school program. So for the third quarter from January 1st through March 31st. So contract obligation for in-school budget is $545,229. Here are the expenditures that we have. So invoices have been paid up through December, which is what's reflected on here. So direct program cost, expenditures are at $129,88.72. Admin cost, $15,588.41. Supportive services, $1,039.94. And work experience, total expenditures, $33,855.43. So total expenditures paid up to date are $171,472.50, which is 31% of the budget has been spent so far. And we still have invoices that we're reviewing for supplemental for December and then for the rest of the quarter. And there's a chart on there that tells you direct program charges are 13. If you move it a little bit to the right, Desiree, I think they can see. And so WEX is about 20% of the expenditure so far, 70% direct program charges, and then 9% for admin cost. Now, if you can move it a little bit to the left. Thank you. So new enrollments for third quarter for in school, we had 8 new enrollments, putting them at 23 out of the 114, putting them at 20%. Carry-ins, no carry-ins, because that's obviously who they brought in that was enrolled previous program year. Medium earnings for the quarter was 5,112. Year to date, 3,456.32, putting them at 86%. Placements for the quarter. So for youth, they could either be placement into education, military apprenticeship, trade placement, or employment. So they had 3 new placements, putting them at 6 for year to date out of the 116, bringing them up to 5%. No certificates or degrees obtained during the quarter, keeping them at 0. And then literacy, numeracy gain, they also didn't have anybody for the quarter. And then we had 1 for the retention with the same employer or education, getting them at year to date 2 and bringing them up to 2%. Work experience, they had 1 new participant placed in WEX, putting them at 43, which could be include carry-ins as well. So 57%. And then exits, they had 11 exits, bringing them up to 23 exits for the year at 61%. So if we can scroll down, Desiree, thank you. So out of the new enrollments that they had, all 8 enrollments were provided services within that first week of enrollment. If we can move on to the out-of-school report. So on here, same thing, we show the budget for the out of school is $1,635,686. Out of that, we also paid invoices up through December. So total expenditures there brought us to $373,283.53, putting us at only 23 expenditures. So direct program cost, $265,696.07. Admin cost, $33,934.87. Supportive services, $2,829.07. And for that one, we did have an ITA for the program year that was paid, so $2,550. And WEX, we had $68,273.52. So if you move to the right, they can actually see the chart of the expenditures on there. So same thing, 71%. Were spent on direct program cost, 18% of the budget was spent on WEX, and 9% was spent on admin costs as well. If we move down a little bit and scroll a little bit to the left, Desiree, thank you. And so new enrollments for the quarter for out of school, we had 46, bringing them to 144 for the year, getting them to 43%, no carry-ins. Medium earnings for the quarter, we had 6,042, bringing them up to 101%. So they've exceeded the 4,000 for the year. New placements, they had 3 placements, bringing them to 9 total year to date, moving them up to 3% slightly. And then certificates or degree attainment, they had 3 new ones. Bringing them to year to date of 25 youth that received a credential or a certificate. So getting them to 8%. Literacy numeracy gain, we had 11 participants increased and bringing those up to 30 as a year to date, 13%. And then no retention for out of school. Work experience, they had 4 new placements for a year to date of 45, bringing them up to 20%. And exits for the quarter, they had 41 for a total of 85 exits so far, bringing them to 75%. So if we scroll down a little bit, Desiree. So out of the 46 new enrollments, all of the youth were provided services within that first week of enrollment. And then we didn't have any new ITAs or any new OJTs as well. If you have any questions, La Habra is here to provide.
Hi, Maggie, this is Carlos. I had a question.
Yes.
I'm curious, underneath the performance category where you guys have military, what exactly is, I mean, I'm a military veteran. I'm just curious, given the recruiting efforts of each service and kind of what happens, what are we doing? What is the program doing? And how does that work from going into this program, transitioning to a recruiter and going into the military?
La Habra is actually on the call. Do you want them to provide a response?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you can promote, I believe Kelly is on.
While we're waiting for Kelly to promote, I just want to share with the committee or remind the committee, there are four stated outcomes that we must make available to any youth that we enroll. Number one is post-secondary education transition. Military trade or military placement, meaning that we should be working with military recruiters to place participants if that is a suitable outcome for them. Apprenticeship placement or a trade placement. Those are the four placement goals that we have for any youth that we enroll in WIOA. Excuse me, I missed one. Unsubsidized employment. So it's unsubsidized employment, post-secondary education, military or apprenticeship trade placement are the four. Those are, that's what we are by law supposed to make available to any youth that we enroll.
Karma, Doug here, I have a question. Could you refresh in-school youth 16 to 20 or 22?
In-school youth 14.
Whoa.
14, yeah, starts as early as 14. Out of school, you typically focus on 16, but because you technically can't drop out in California, like it's
A
unique situation.
Yeah. So it's basically high schoolers, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then the out of school could pick up after that. And they could be in college and still be out of school.
That's correct. Right? So it's like, okay, if you graduated from high school and we meet you this summer and we enroll you in WIOA, technically you're out of school.
Out of school.
Exactly. Okay. Until you start college or whatever you may be doing, or you're just, right, you're not engaged with any education system. So maybe you graduate from high school, or maybe you have a kid that actually somehow dropped out, but right, essentially you're not engaged with an education entity.
It seems like with the out of school, you know, I was looking at the numbers the last time and I started thinking, are the numbers bad? Because everyone seems to be working, there's more jobs than people. So maybe they're not coming to the workforce more. But when you look at in-school youth, I mean, you're working with a community that's kind of captured, you know, and it's just a matter of, maybe I'm wrong, just a matter of getting to the high school and trying to work with counselors. I'm always surprised that that number is so low, because it's really a captured group, you know, not that they're coming to you, but you could go to them more so than the out of school or people that are unemployed coming in, because they're looking for jobs. But yeah, that's I'm always wondering why that number isn't really, really high.
You know, one of the challenges, I'll be honest and tell you, one of the challenges, the way the law is written. So the law says that no less than 75% of our funding has to be spent on out of school youth, and then 25% spent on in-school youth, right? So the problem is that you can't really drop out of school in California. So in other states, like where I'm from, you can actually drop out of high school at 16, right? And so that means that community has a lot of people that they can pick from for out of school youth, because you're disengaged from the education system and you're in a dropout recovery school that's not funded by K-12, right? So in California, it's different. You can't really drop out of high school in California. And if you did, you go to a dropout recovery school, which is funded by K-12, which makes you an in-school youth. I hope that makes sense, and which is part of the problem. Now, I do know that California is working on waivers with DOL, because they realize that is a problem for California, that our education system isn't set up the same way as other states. So when you're trying to capture out-of-school youth, it's harder in California because you have far more in-school youth because they're not going to a traditional high school, they're going to a recovery high school, right? But because they're in a recovery high school that's funded through K-12, they're considered in-school youth. So it's a bit of a challenge in California to really capture out-of-school youth. Most of the time, I think that in California, they're looking right now, if it's an out-of-school youth, it's probably somebody who graduated from high school that isn't in college, or maybe they dropped out of college. So you're now capturing the college dropouts or the kids that graduated from high school and didn't go to college. They're kind of your pot. There are a lot of, there was a study done on opportunity youth in Orange County, and there seems to be a whole lot of them. I just don't know that we're necessarily using the right method to connect with them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when they go to a recovery high school, every district has a, they call it something, but I'm wondering, is La Habra, that seems to be the place where they're not really in school, they're not going to go to college or something else. These are the real, guys that just haven't really figured it out, and men and women. That seems to be a place where they could really partner with. Does that make sense?
You're absolutely right. Now, one of the other challenges, the La Habra has its own school. So what's different for our WIOA program in Orange County than a lot of workforce areas, we don't usually have a school connected to our WIOA program, but La Habra has its own school. So I don't know if by La Habra having its own school, it creates a challenge with connecting with other schools. I do know that in conversations with Maggie that they are trying to connect with other schools and develop a pipeline, but I don't know if that creates kind of a challenge when you're dealing with in-school youth, if La Habra has its own school, but then you're trying to connect with other schools to bring them into the WIOA program for the county.
It's a good explanation. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's very complicated, and our heads aren't in this all day long. So yeah, appreciate it.
Doug, I wanted to offer a suggestion and a karma actually, because as we were talking just now, when I was listening, I had a new thought. I come from the K-12 system, and I think, there's lots of different areas that we might, look to find candidates, as the best word I'm going to say, or students. But I wonder if we might offer a information session to registrars at schools in Orange County. The registrars are the people in our school systems who are, they know everybody who exits the traditional or the alternative school setting. And they are the person, because they have to, there's paperwork happening there. So I feel like if those people are informed of these services, which I have a feeling most of them are not, if they are informed of these services that these exiting students have, availability to, then I think that might be a really strong way to capture those students exiting any of the public high schools in Orange County. So I never thought about it before, but as you guys were talking, I'm like, ooh, let's do that. I don't know who would do the information session, but even a virtual information session where they're just giving that potentially a flyer that could be handed out, something like that would probably help these numbers increase.
I'll tell you something that was successful with IBW. We started, when I got on the board early, we were looking at support services, and we would send apprentices down and they'd go in there, they're all alone, the one stops are a little complicated, and it didn't work. When we suggested, and I think what you're kind of suggesting is, why don't you cohort, come down to the school and do the getting them in a cohort. That was so successful. We had someone from the one stop came down. Everybody that was eligible was able to sign up, and it was very, very successful for our apprentices. And I think for the workforce board, it fit their needs too. But I think what you're suggesting really makes sense, because it's very similar to that. These kids aren't going over to these places. You're going to, you've got to come to them. And if you have a ready-made person at a district that knows who all these folks are, boy, that's where they should go. That's a good suggestion, because it worked for us. It worked remarkably well for us.
And from a numbers perspective, we have 86 public high schools. That's not including charter and private, by the way. But there are about 86 public high schools in Orange County, and each one of them have a registrar. And so that's a unique body. And those registrars, I mean, that's all public information. So we might have it. So Karma, if we want to go this route, I had my staff put together a list of different kind of staff at schools and districts. And so if we have a list of that, we could easily pass it along, but we just pulled it off the websites basically, because they're public information on websites. So we could at least get maybe an information session together and start this communication.
I would like that. So Maggie and I have kind of had some conversations with, we've kind of started doing that with different departments within the county. So for example, Maggie and I organized for orientation sessions to happen at MLB, and Maggie will talk about that a little bit later, where some of the county departments that have the youth that we're serving, so we could basically get that information to them and say, hey, wait a minute, we have a program that can support your youth. Allow us the opportunity to talk more about it. And then once we get you to understand what it is, allow us to have our service provider come in to do some recruiting. So Kathy, I will meet with you to kind of talk about how to do that. I don't want to, I know that you guys wanted to ask Kelly directly. So she is on the platform now. So I want to give Kelly the opportunity to respond to her own question or to the questions directly. Kelly, I think you're still on mute.
I forget that you unmute us or mute us. So thank you again for having us and allowing us a little bit of time to speak to the board today. And thank you, Karma, for answering the question so well so far. But can I tell you a little bit about our third quarter progress and the, some of the issues that we faced, as well as I think some of our successes. As I reported to the board last quarter, we had two of our more senior personnel on personal leave. You know, there's been a lot of changes within our program. And so they both have separated from us now. While, you know, we're sad that that occurred, we are also taking this as an opportunity then to look at our program holistically and move from the we've always done it this way to, hey, we have a new way of thinking. So we're really excited about the opportunities. And we've also hired two new full-time case managers in February. Two in February. And we're hiring some part-time case managers too, because you can imagine our load when you're not fully staffed is very difficult to meet our numbers. Some of the new things that we did in this quarter is we've established a calendar for our staff to try to make it where our students want to be in college. So we're trying to focus on post-secondary education. So we've done, we've committed to do one field trip every month to a different college. So around the area. So far we've done Chapman College, Cal State Fullerton, and Fullerton College. And we have the next quarter for May and June now. On our calendar. As you probably already know, to be eligible for the WIOA program here, you have to have one of the barriers. You know, so our clients are either homeless or they're justice involved, they have an IEP, they're pregnant mom or dad, school dropout, or foster youth. So we've tried to identify those places that we find them. So Commissioner Boyd, you mentioned registrars. We didn't think of that because we went straight to the superintendents. So we've sent out letters to all the superintendents of every school district in the county, but maybe it doesn't trickle down. So we didn't think about going to, what'd you say, 86 public schools. So that's a really good suggestion for us to go directly to schools versus the superintendents, because they're busy and they're offsite. We are working with not just John Muir Charter School, which we've had this partnership for 40 something years as we've had this program, but we also work with the CCPA school that is, I think the county set that up, right? It started with the Los Alamitos base. So we're there once a week. And we also work with them now in their locations in San Juan Capistrano and I think Mission Viejo and a couple other locations. So we're hoping to capture that audience there too. We also are working with Learn for Life and Pathways, and we've done that for quite some time. We're hoping that we're reaching our students, but in this assessment, especially in this last quarter that I've been heavily involved, we've noticed that We didn't get off the, we've always done it one way. And so now we're looking at the new way of thinking. COVID changed everything on top of that. Where kids go to school, how kids go to school, where people want to work. I mean, it's across the nation that people are either don't want to work at all, or they're really, people are really looking for jobs. So we're looking at what our understanding is, why we're not exiting enough of our students. And so if you don't exit enough, then you have too many people in the program that you can't get the new enrollments. We find that a lot of our students and participants are in crisis mode. You know, they're homeless. They, you know, just last 2 weeks ago, we had somebody whose grandfather kicked him out. The mother died, but the grandfather controlled the money, you know, so then we're looking for housing. We're looking for mental health services. And we've always operated more on the wraparound type services versus an education and employment program. So we're trying now to look differently because the county has so many resources. We shouldn't have to be the ones that find the housing for our clients. We should have a partnership, a better partnership with different agencies, so we can soft hand off our clients to them and then still work with them on education and employment, but the housing and the food and the transportation. So we're working on those things. I know it's taken this last quarter, but I think that our case managers and our staff are working to look at how many we're exiting, because our carry-ins and our follow-ups aren't even listed on our year to date because they're just follow-ups, even though we do activity a month with them. So we're also working on trying to make it easier for our clients. For the county now offers, maybe you always have, I don't know, but the county is offering so many resource fairs and so many job fairs and so many trainings that now we're trying to say, you know what, we'll provide bus transportation and take you there. So there's no excuses. So we're trying to make that happen. But we're also working with our city, because we are still a city government. We are working on the billing. You know, the billing's been an issue. As you can see, we have only completed bills through December on your report. We've submitted them, but we keep either making mistakes or they keep being rejected. Some of our mistakes are really, it's hard for us right now. You know, as I told you last month, we can only bill if the check is cleared. So I have my list. We have one check that hasn't cleared from December and one check that hasn't cleared since February and three in March and things like that. So we're juggling our financial system to try to make this work. We also have a few issues when it comes to, like you mentioned, giving somebody a gas card. I think that was Commissioner Mangione. So when we give a gas card to a client, we pay for the gas card, we book it, we have the client sign, we give it to them, they go out and get the gas, they come back, and they're supposed to give us a receipt. You can imagine a lot of our clients don't come back, and then we have to chase them down and go get the receipt. So our temporary plan, and it sounds kind of silly, our temporary plan right now is we go to the gas station with them. But you can imagine, to get that receipt, then it takes my staff time going to the gas station, coming back. And so we're trying to find what's the right way to do this. We believe that we're going to get this. We believe by the end of this quarter, one more year of our contract. We feel like we can make this 100% work next year. It's just a matter of changing our policies and changing our way of thinking. Our staff really are trying hard to do this. So we're learning how to better use the mobile unit, where before we thought we were just staffing it. Now we realize it's a mobile office and we can start having clients come out there. And it's a great opportunity to meet people across the county. I feel like we're moving in the right direction. Although these statistics on our end, we have to look at them a little differently because we're not sure why they look the way they look. So we want our monthly report to look like the monthly report you see, so that way we have the right indication of where we're moving. So that's our third quarter report and what we've done. I am the director of community services here, so I'm not paid through WIOA. I'm paid through the city of La Habra, so that helps. As for the manager, we're not sure what we're going to do. We have another manager from our department, Kim Albarian, who's been working really closely since Al has been gone. And we hope to rebuild, though, very soon. Does anybody have any direct questions for me?
Yeah, I have a comment. You brought something up, that you were finding housing and food and this. It seems like we have a county organization that does that. And, you know, is your purview should be trying to get them to work. I understand the housing and all the other issues because you deal with an at-risk or a barriered community. So, Karma, how does the county partner with us on these services. I'm sure everybody's in their silo and they all got their things to do, but we've got two groups working on the same thing. And maybe if the one stops could send them to a service at the county, you know, rather than WIOA expending money on things that the county's already spending money on. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense to me, but.
Okay, I want to make sure I understand your question, Doug, because I'm a little lost, to be honest with you. Okay. So what I think I hear you say is, hey, Karma, how can you work with other municipalities so that you can stretch the dollars? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, kind of. Like there's already a service. The county already has services and support services. Are we replicating in a way those services?
So, okay, good question. So I'll tell you how I'm trying to tackle it. I don't know that we're necessarily replicating. And honestly, out of all the money available in Orange County for services, WIOA is probably the better one, meaning that you can do far more with WIOA than you can with most of the other programs available throughout this county in terms of serving participants. So for example, if a youth enrolled in our WIOA program had challenges paying for their rent, we could pay 3 to 6 months worth of their rent. Most of our county programs do not work like that, right? Or let's say that the kid had challenges with utility bills or things like that, or car and things like that. There are far more that we could do with the WIOA program once they're enrolled than some of these other programs available through the county. Now, what we can't do is we can't buy groceries, but that's where we send them over to SSA and access kind of the general relief funding, right? One of the strategies that we're trying to do as a workforce system is, number one, in our new MOU, is define or call out everybody who's a partner in our sandbox, so to speak, all the services and supports that they have available, and how do we access them as an entire workforce system. That's one of our strategies to do it, is basically bring everybody to the table, have them partner with us in this MOU, an infrastructure agreement, and in that document, call out who has what services and how do we connect people to them, and how do we demonstrate that we're connecting them to these services using CalJobs. So that's one of the ways we're trying to do it, Doug, is to get everybody to play in a sandbox, so to speak, but then also to define what assets do we have in Orange County. Orange County is a very resource-rich community, but those resources typically have strings tied to them. So if I understand what resource you have and what string comes with that resource, I can better navigate how to connect the person to it. So the answer to your question is yes, we're working at it, Doug, but to be honest with you, a participant that is enrolled in WIOA has far more resources available to them than most people.
Yeah, that's a shame. And, you know, we can help Gloria still on, you know, we have a lot of, not our members, but a lot of members of the Labor Federation that represent the workers at all those different agencies. And it just seems like we're all disconnected. We also have friends on the Board of Supervisors. I'm going to ask them, like, where are these things? You're probably right. If we're able to get money in someone's hands faster than the county does, then that's an issue for the county, and that needs to be brought up too. But we'll go further with this. It just seems like, you know, where everybody's working in their own, like you say, we're not all in the same sandbox. So. Right. Anyway, thank you for the explanation. I appreciate it.
So I think we had the questions answered that were asked. I just want to make sure before we have, I think there's some more information items that we're moving on to, right, Karma?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, so Maggie, if you want to move on to the next item on the agenda. Oh, I apologize. Did you do your two, right?
I did my performance report, yes.
I apologize. Now I need to turn it over to Adriana. But before I turn it over to Adriana, I just kind of want to point out to the board to pay attention, because what Maggie just reported to you was the up to the third quarter report, and we still don't have all the invoices. So we are now getting close. Well, we're now at the fourth quarter. Today, we're within the fourth quarter. So there's likely going to be some money that is unspent under this contract. And I just want to make sure this board is aware of that, because what I don't want is for you guys a couple of months from now, I'm like, wait a minute, Karma, we didn't talk about that. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. In Maggie's report, she shared with you that there will be likely money returned off of that contract. All right. And with that said, Adriana, can you go ahead and give us a report out on your summer training and employment program?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. The STEPS program is the training and education for students with disabilities. That's item 7B. I don't know if you are displaying that. There we go. Okay, so we have the $52,000 budget, and this program is going to conclude this coming June. At this point in the, for this report, it includes January invoices, the January invoice, which brings us a year to date of $33,690.59. It's about 85% of the budget. We did a forecast, and the service provider was likely going to run a little bit short, about a month short, for their direct program costs, salaries, and benefits for the end of the year. So we did a budget modification, and that wasn't concluded or finalized early enough to get the February and March invoices on here. But that would have, February, March would have brought this year to date up about $10,000. And to make up for some of the shortage in the salaries and benefits line item for the end of the year, the goodwill has, they will go ahead and contribute some in-kind dollars for that. So we're going to be fine with the budget as the program closes. Going down to the performance, last quarter I reported that we did meet our contracted obligation of 50. So things kind of slowed down. Also, things slowed down in referrals from the Department of Rehabilitation. So we just had a lot of ones this quarter. One new enrollment in STEPS, one new work site, and one new enrollment in work experience. Referrals, also one to the Ready, Set, OC entrepreneurial program, and one program exit. But again, we at least did make our quota for this contract. And moving down a little bit on the screen to the trainings. Just like any of our reports, our service providers do well in getting the students enrolled fairly quickly. So the majority of the students, 34 year to date, were enrolled within the first week of the program. And then you know, the numbers luckily are not as large as we go into the program, and they are getting enrolled in a timely manner. So that is basically the performance for quarter three. Did you want me to go ahead and go into the narrative of highlights right now for this, Karma?
I think you should.
Okay. So let's see here. Well, I talked a little bit about the budget and how we're going to see a revision for next quarter, but it's small. We just moved some of the indirect cost money. It was that $484 amount into direct program costs. So the budget closure is going to look fine. We have gotten word from the foundation that funds the program that they are going to renew the program for another year. So we have our renewal in, and we're waiting to get word on the new program. And then we're hoping to see things ramp up after the close of this fiscal year and starting the new year, especially when students will be available for summer. So we're looking forward to this renewed contract with the goodwill in for July. Let's see, a notable new worksite for this quarter that was exciting was the Able Coffee Roasters. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this company. They operate a coffee, so it's kind of like a Starbucks kind of a service in Ornamental Beach and also in Fullerton. And their mission is to hire persons, young people with disabilities. So we have them as a new work site this quarter. And I believe we're going to have some participants start there in April. So we can give you more information on that when we get to next quarter. We had five students complete their work experience this quarter. And really, because we don't have a lot of new enrollments, I've seen staff really concentrating on giving one-on-one services to the students who are going into work experience. They concentrate on our soft skills, attitude in the workplace, workplace ethics, how to use CalJobs, resume writing. So all that has been the concentration this quarter in servicing the youth that have been enrolled in the program and work experience. I don't know if you have any questions. I don't know, Desiree, if Chris Stoner is here, but he is the program manager for the Google program. If anybody has any further questions. But that's pretty much the conclusion of my report for this quarter.
All right, Kathy, if there are no questions, and I'd like to move on to the next action item.
Perfect.
Right, excuse me, information item.
Yep.
Okay, so Maggie, can we go ahead and move to the youth with A, B, and C?
Yes. So for our youth with impact is our 10-week entrepreneurship program. We actually had 9 youth enrolled, 3 of them dropped, and we have 6 on track towards completing their final projects during this fourth quarter. For 2110C, it offers our 12-week employment training program or work experience training for our youth. We actually had 1 youth completed that was hired on by 211 at the end of their training. And then we also had 2 new participants that started. One of them dropped off, and then we have 1 on track towards completing during this fourth quarter. For financial literacy, we actually have our 5-week series that teaches our youth intro to banking, savings, budgeting, credit reports, credit scores. We actually had 4 youth enrolled and then 3 on track to complete during fourth quarter as well. And then something that we started new during this quarter is to increase target enrollment for justice-involved individuals. We actually started hosting virtual orientations once a month for youth at the detention facility. So juvenile hall, YLA, we do it on the first Monday of every month. And then we actually have them provide us referrals to any youth that are interested in the program after attending that orientation. We also conducted 1 in-person orientation at the Youth Guidance Center. To also increase enrollments for justice-involved individuals as well. I think that's all I have for that. Do you want me to go ahead and do the location update? Okay.
Yes.
So we are currently providing Ready, Set, OC services at Orangewood, at Manchester Office Building, at La Habra Office, and out of the Mobile Unit and Workforce Solution. We do in-person and virtual services. We have extended hours at most of these locations other than Manchester Office Building that closes at 5. And then we're also providing services on the Mobile Unit at least once a month. We have Ready, Set, OC staff on board. And then we also schedule appointments as needed as well to be able to provide services there.
Wonderful. Thank you for those updates, Maggie. Are we ready to move on to success stories, Karma?
That's correct.
So we have 2 Ready, Set, OC youth that will be presenting. We'll go, we'll have Cecilia Reyes go first and then Manuel Fernandez.
See Cecilia, she's probably just needing to unmute.
Oh, sorry.
There you are. Hi, Cecilia. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello. Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Quick somebody gonna guide Cecilia to speak, or do you?
We can go ahead. Cecilia, would you tell us more about your journey?
Yes. I didn't know. Absolutely, I live in La Habra, so I did not know about any services, know about OCYC or John Muir. I was guided to John Muir through my school, La Vista, the continuation school, to proceed as fast as I can to graduate. Now, I did that because I really needed to graduate because I was trying to ease into my career and show myself some independence, also support my family and help myself self-improvement. I was very bad. I was on a bad track my junior to senior year. So my mom was ill, my sister just got a stroke. So I was trying to manage between all that. And once I heard that there was a service, that there was a school who was providing services as in job development, that I was surprised because I was like, oh, okay, I get to work, get a job, and I get to learn. And I'm a person who loves to learn. I absorb and I adapt. And that's one of my interests, one of my fascinations. The program helped me through gaining work experience, skills such as adapting to my surroundings, communication skills, and they also helped me get a job at the Collaborative. Now, the Collaborative is the CRCC, the Collaborative, the Gray Center. It helps low-income families find services such as these, and also helps them grow and with their community and bond with the community. It helps the youth help within their own community, which is something I find amazing. And that's something I adore, to see that I can help a homeless person gain, like at least go to, like take them to a shelter, help them with getting themselves in order. And if they're immigrants, I know Spanish, so I get to talk to them and get to try to help them out. And just doing that, it inspires me to talk and motivate. And it hits me so hard near my heart, where it makes me want to even stay in that program, which, to be honest, I did not know existed. See, the thing I like about it is that at school, at John Muir Charter School in La Habra, I like how they had the setup where the case managers and the job developer are right next door. They're not even that far. I don't have to go all the way to a different facility. They're right next door. Now my interactions with my case manager and my job developer, they're very open, very kind, and very welcoming. So I feel free to talk to them and go to them if I need anything. So those services help. So goals that I have is to ease into my military career with that gained work experience, with that background I have. Okay, so I want to have work experience in the civilian life, so then when I go into the military life, I just have a more responsible catch, because in the military life, it's just a more responsible life. It's on you, you're responsible, you matter, you better hit those points, and you better get it done. Those type of motivation, I'm very direct. I'm like very, I don't know how to unfilter that, but yes, I'm very direct when it comes to that. Yeah, those are one of my goals. Another one of my goals is to make sure that I can succeed with my family and push them to where they need to be. And so I can be their backup, if anything, and be there for them whenever they need something. Now this program benefits me a lot. Okay, so I have gained work experience. I've gained skills. I've gained communication skills. Now I did not learn more and grow off of that until I hit this program. Now, it was very helpful because I didn't have like those connections to figure out where I can find this. And I'm very independent. So I do these things all by myself. I did not help or get help from my mother. My sisters helped a little bit because they would be very stubborn and they would not leave me alone until I offered them the body. So that's one thing that they benefited me. That's how this program benefited me so much. And the funny thing is, it's at school. So I don't have to go to a completely different facility across the city or in a different area where I don't know.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any trouble finding my way. Now, anything that I would actually discuss is I was a 16-year-old taking care of a 42-year-old that was very sick. And I had a sister that had stroke. So I was very independent and I had to become very strong. So with that sense, I grew a lot. And that's something that's grew a part of me. So with that, it helps me like guide myself to where I need to be. Because it's not only about my family, it's also about where I need to be, where I must remain independent. Let's see. I'm very, very intuitive, enthusiastic. So I would love to help anybody in need of help. So I would offer services to like a female. Her name is Tanya. She has a baby, a 4-year-old. She needs services to find themselves an apartment where they can find like themselves a place to live. Those are the type of things I like to help. And also there was a homeless man who didn't speak English, and my colleagues only know English. And they were struggling. So I like to help. I'm a very helpful person. Above that, that is my story.
Cecilia, that was so, thank you, heartwarming. It's nice to know that all those resources were made available and convenient for you. You might've said, how did you hear about the program?
I heard about this program through my counselor at La Vista.
Okay, very good.
He was asking me about that and I was surprised. And then I was like, okay, let's do this. Okay, I can do this.
Oh, you've made our day. Thank you for sharing that awesome story. And I think we have another youth. Is it Manuel? I can see you, Manuel. And now I think we can hear you. It looks like you're on mute. Try talking. We can hear you, but it's broken up.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Manuel Fernandez. I'm here to tell my story.
So Manuel, I'm not sure if you're speaking, but we lost you somewhere in the middle of that.
Hello, sorry for that.
That's okay, you're back.
Okay, all right. The way I found out about this program was out of my military recruiter. I didn't have my GED or high school, so I was struggling a lot. I was 17 years old by then, and I was struggling a lot. I had economical problems. I was being abused, labor abuse, and works. Like I was 17, and I just got out on this country, and I was getting a lot of confused. I was homeless, and there was a lot of difficult things in my life by then. I was at a really low point by then, but my military recruiter referred me to this program, and it was great. It was great, just great. It helps me a lot, and I'm getting my life on track again. And I feel like without this program, I wouldn't be where I'm am right now. So how this program will is helping me right now? First of all, it helped me with school, and after that, it helped me to get a job. And with this includes interview clothing, how to speak on my interview. They teach me a lot of stuff I didn't know. And then right now with this new goal set, I want to join the military and I want to help my family in Mexico. They're helping me to get better jobs, opportunities on job fairs. Thanks to my case manager, Ivana, is helping me a lot with different jobs and getting to know of this. It's helping me a lot with boost passes, work clothings and services provided, just as medical programs and more. And I'm really thankful of this program, to be honest. And like I said before, like I mentioned, without this program, I didn't know where I should be right now. I probably would be struggling with my life, be homeless again, and just getting a difficult life. Right now, getting my life again. I'm setting more goals. And like I said before, I want to help. And thanks to this program, I get hope again and get my life get my life in track again.
Oh, man, well.
And thank you very much for hearing me.
Yeah, we thank you for coming on, logging on this morning and sharing your story with us. It's nice to hear that you feel like you have resources kind of at your disposal now, where you didn't necessarily have that before. So I want to say thank you to both Cecilia and Manuel for taking your time to come on today and share with us. It's nice to hear that our youth are moving along in these programs that are being available and offered to them. So thank you. The next would be the grant matrix, Karma.
I'll go ahead and go over it. Can we go ahead and pull the screen up? So essentially the intent of bringing this grant matrix is to make you aware of all the grants that we are currently supporting and our grants that we are applying for. Right now, at the top of the list, you might've received some flyers from us about the micro business grant. We received $3.9 million to provide $2,500 in funding for underserved micro businesses in Orange County. We conducted our first round of the grant application process. We thought that we would have more than enough applicants apply, but unfortunately we did not. And so now we are re-releasing this grant opportunity. So effective May 9th, we will be reintroducing or reopening the application process to the Orange County community so that micro businesses that are eligible can actually apply for the funding. We are going to leave the application open until we find enough qualified applicants. So just a note that originally with the first round, we only found about 624 eligible applicants of the 1,450 that we were shooting for. So we've got approximately about 800, a little over 800 grants to pass out. We did send out flyers. We can go ahead and, I believe I sent them to the board members, but I will resend them to the board members today so that you guys can share them with your communities and or your network so that we can get plenty of applicants. So that's the first grant on that list. The second grant is the DOL Careers Grant. We received $3 million from the Department of Labor to support dislocated workers in Orange County. Unfortunately, as of today, we still haven't gotten that grant off the ground. We are still working on procuring the necessary components of that grant as a part of our grant application. And we are still looking to hire staff to manage that grant. So just an update on that we still haven't gotten off the ground. The STEPS grant that Adriana just shared with you, we are at the close of that grant for this cycle. We are looking to receive more funding from the funder for next year. The first reiteration of that, we are about to close and we just reported out on that. And so we will be looking to update this to add more money because now the grantor is going to give us additional money to do it another year. And so we will be updating this report once we receive those proceeds. The VEEP program is our veteran employment program led by Eric Inslee in our department. We received $500,000 to support grants. I'm pleased to say that he's got about 50% of his enrollment goal completed, which is pretty good. So we're halfway there on that grant. We've done a lot of activities in this community to really encourage veteran enrollment into this grant program and co-enrollment into WIOA. So hopefully more to come on that one. And then just some of the other grants, the RPI, which is the Regional Employment Slingshot Grant, that grant is coming towards an end. We did get a 3-month extension that took us to March. So we are now submitting an application for an updated version of that grant that has a lot of ties to the community college and education system in the next reiteration of it. So hopefully, again, by the next time we do our quarterly update, we'll be able to supply more information about the new 4.0 or whatever version they're on now, but the new regional grant and where we are with that one. But the regional grant really supports economic development as well as supporting the entire workforce system. Just a reminder, with the regional grants, we work together with Santa Ana and Anaheim to support Orange County as a region, to provide supports for education, business, as well as workforce services. So there'll be more information to come on that one. I do want to note that you should have received an invitation for a regional meeting, and that is where we're going to meet with the other two workforce development boards and together work on our strategy or our vision for the region. So you should have received that. I believe it is in July. I want to say it's in July. So if you did not receive the invitation, let me know. We can resend it out to you. And then the other grants on this list, Erin updated to kind of gray them out to let you know that those grants are closed. So the National Dislocated Worker Grant was the grant that we applied to create OJTs for businesses to encourage them to hire those individuals that had been impacted by COVID and lost their jobs. We were trying to incentivize companies to hire them by creating OJTs. Rhonda successfully developed about 31 OJTs as a result of that grant opportunity, but unfortunately we weren't able to find any participants to put in those OJTs. So as a result, we made a decision to give the money back to the state. And then the AB 1111 grant, we just successfully closed that one out. That was another grant to support individuals with disabilities, this time focusing on adults. And so we just successfully in March closed that particular grant out. And then there's the regional 3.1 grant and the prison to employment grant that was led by Santa Ana that has essentially closed. But that was one of the regional grants that we did and Santa Ana led. Below this are some pending grant applications. We have the American Rescue Plan Good Jobs Challenge. We're waiting to hear back on whether or not that we received the $25 million grant that we applied for. We've got, just mentioned again, the Summer Employment Training Grant, which we just shared that the state has said that they're going to give to us. So it's on the list is pending. Hopefully next board meeting, we'll have received the funds and be able to talk about it. And then on the list is the Regional Equity Recovery. So that's that new regional grant that I just mentioned, the new reiteration of it. It's worth $1.3 million. And like I said, it has a strong emphasis on partnering with community colleges, supporting English language learners and immigrants. Are there any questions or concerns about the grant matrix and any updates? There are two other grants that we will be applying for, the CERC grant, which is also supporting regional equity work in our community. That one also is about a $25 million application. We are going to be asking the Board of Supervisors for permission to go after that grant. If they grant us permission to go after that grant, we will add it to this grant matrix and provide you an update. Any questions or concerns about any of the grants that we've applied for or are applying to? Okay. All right, if not, then I'm gonna go to the next item, which is EDD compliance and audit updates. So probably about a year or so ago, I recall having a conversation with the board members about all of our open compliances and where we stand with them. And because of the pandemic, there wasn't a lot of work done in terms of updating any of those compliance findings. And in fact, EDD wasn't actually going out conducting any audits. So that has recently started back up again. And so what I wanna do is make sure that I'm being transparent and reporting back to this board of all of the compliance compliance that are open, though all the ones that are closed, and all of the compliance or auditing that we're conducting on our service providers. So in the orange section is some of those compliance findings that I read off to you that were some challenges that we inherited as a workforce board and that they're still open with the state. So they're ongoing. So the state has not resolved those. As you may recall, those are like the $19 million worth of compliance findings together with some of the challenges that happened before 2018. And so I just want to kind of give you guys an update of where we are. Those are ongoing. I haven't heard anything back from the state. The green section, so the next one down, are all the compliance fine, the audits or compliance and monitorings that were conducted on our workforce development board. As you can see, all of them have been resolved. We had no compliance findings. They've been successfully resolved. And I have to highlight that a lot of that is as a result of our policies. So because we kind of took into account some of the challenges that we had in the past, we started developing policies and procedures. And as a result of developing those policies and procedures, we have absolutely no compliance findings listed or open. They've all, when they went out and conducted the audits on us, they've all been closed, like no compliance findings and all closed. So I just want to highlight this board in doing a successful job of updating those policies, getting them out there so that we can get ahead of issues that our service providers might have. We might have had in our process, resolving those issues and developing policies as a result of that, that support helping us be in compliance of the laws. So I just wanna highlight in that green section, we don't have any that are open. So all of those monitorings conducted by EDD have all successfully been closed. The blue section are fiscal monitoring. So those are done by a third party accounting firm for the most part. And so right now we've got one that is resolved completed. So no findings under that one. We've got two that are open and ongoing. So like I said at the beginning that as a result of the pandemic, we weren't necessarily going out conducting audits like we normally would because it was hard to do. So now we are. And so I just want to highlight that those are in progress. And so they're at this time open and we're waiting for them to conduct their full review of all of the financial activities and report back to us what if there are any findings or if not. And then the last section, the gray section, are in regards to our service providers. So the county has a compliance, a program compliance and program monitoring unit. They go out and evaluate our service providers like La Habra and MCS and America Works and Goodwill to ensure that their activities are in compliance with the law, that they are providing services that support our own policies, but also the law, the federal state laws. Like I mentioned, because of the pandemic, they weren't necessarily going out, but now they are. And so I want to provide you an update of where we are with those monitorings. And this report does that. In the future, this report will have a little bit more information about any observations or any findings. So we'll give you a little more information what they are or how many there are. But right now, I just kind of wanted to give you a high level overview of where we are with this so that you as a board know where we stand with any of the compliance findings and our observations at a state level and at a local level. Are there any questions or concerns about any of our audits and findings and so forth? Okay, if not, then that's my update for our audits.
The next item says discussion about procurement and cost reimbursement.
Right. So in our previous board meetings, we had that presentation by third sector strategy. We kind of talked about paper performance. And I don't know, you know, as a committee, have you guys decided if you're interested in exploring that or not? I just wanted to bring it back up again because we wanted to learn more about what the options are. But then I thought it would be important for this committee to kind of make a decision on whether or not do we want to explore that? Do we want to stay at cost reimbursement? Do we want to do a hybrid of that? This was our opportunity to have further discussion on those topics and find out where do we stand as a committee in terms of future RFPs. And just wanted to know, you know, where are we with that?
And I feel like anybody can unmute at this point. Let us know that you're good with kind of the idea that was proposed in our session. But I am I'm a big fan of moving forward with the new strategies. And so I don't know, does anybody else, Doug, Carlos, Gloria, anybody have any other thoughts on that before you move on?
Oh, I think we're good.
Likewise, this is Carlos, I'm in agreement.
Well, hold on. So when you say agreement and we're good, remember there were three different strategies presented, right? So there was pay for performance, there was performance-based contracting, and then there was cost reimbursement. And so
we talked about, I remember there was the way San Diego did it. And then we talked about maybe not going full board like San Diego did, but looking at like a baby step. Okay. And so I'm not fully equipped with the language for it, but I remember I really was supporting the baby step into maybe not going full board, but trying with a pilot, especially with the Youth Services Committee and our work moving forward here. So that's what I'm saying specifically.
Okay. And so then my question would be then, if that is the vision for this committee, would you like for the staff to kind of go back and kind of like brainstorm and then submit a concept and then you guys review and agree to that concept as a possible pilot project?
I'm a big fan of that. Yes. Doug, Carlos,
yes. Yes. Because, you know, we got that was months ago. I think now your staff needs to, you know, figure out what's going to work for you guys and how we can move in a different direction. But we're not the experts here. You guys are, and we can oversee as to what's happening. So yeah, I'm in favor of that. Absolutely.
Okay. So then let's talk about the population. So San Diego used Justice Involved as their pilot population, right? I think I shared with you that Maggie had been going out to like MLB and some other departments within the county to start engaging with those departments to enroll Justice Involved youth. I don't believe that our service providers have really, in terms of youth, have targeted necessarily that population, but I wanna highlight, so our barrier populations are pregnant parenting teens, they are justice involved youth, they are youth that are in foster care or emancipating for foster care, they are youth with disabilities, they are youth with basic skills deficiencies. So when we talk about honing in on a particular group, I'd like to kind of get a feel if this board has any ideas. Are you leaving it up to us to decide what target group will we focus on?
My response to that is that potentially, if we could get those broken out, I know you just ran over them pretty quickly and I was taking a quick note on that. Sorry. But if we could, I think I heard this from Doug too. I would rely on your expertise as far as which you think would be the best and maybe a suggestive sell on that, if you would, on how you feel the best approach would be, but maybe giving us a little bit more evidence to look at to say, hey, we agree or we disagree based on this.
Okay.
Yeah, and I agree with that. We don't know off the top of our heads the demographic here of how many foster people are there? How many pregnant teens, people right. with disability? I mean, I think you don't want to make it a numbers game, but in a way you do. It's which group is going to need, all of these groups need help. Now, I know foster, we've been talking about that for a long time, and they get thrown out on the street at 18, and that's a hard road to hoe. So, but yeah, I think if you give us some real data as to, And some of these groups may already have support services from other entities that are really helping them. So yeah, I think I would like to see some real numbers on these things and what we could do with our resources to make the best impact on a group.
Okay.
I don't have those numbers.
Right.
Got it. So what I will do, so every year Orange County releases like an annual report on the conditions of children in Orange County, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that report kind of highlights some of the opportunities we have as a community to engage with certain populations, right? So what I'll do is I'll send the entire board a copy of that report. And then what we'll do is as a unit, our team will go back and kind of brainstorm in regards to demographics provided in that report and some census demographics, and then we'll come up with maybe two or three proposed concepts.
Perfect. Yes.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would appreciate those things. We used to get, I know when you contracted with Wallace Walrod, the OC Business Council, we used to get that. They used to put a book out every year. Yeah. And it was really a pretty good snapshot of where the county was going as far as graduates, this. It was pretty comprehensive, but if the county has that information and you can readily get it to us, I think it'd be good for the board to have.
Okay, I'll send that to you today. It's produced every year by the county. So I will send it to you today, the most recent report today.
That sounds great, Karma. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions or concerns about the different cost reimbursement, pay-per-performance, or performance-based contracts?
Just the last comment would be that I think that I like the idea of the performance-based contracts. Again, I don't want to jump all the way to the end game where we might be susceptible to not having enough service providers that would elect to participate. But whatever we think we can do within reason so that we can move in that direction to change it up a little bit, that I would be a fan of. So I appreciate your suggestion to make some proposals and move in that direction.
Okay, and I just want to share with you, I just recently met with 1OC, which was my first experience with them. And I had no idea that 1OC provided such resources to mom and pop nonprofits. And so I just want to share with you that I've had a conversation with them about possibly educating the nonprofits that they engage with of how they can go after workforce dollars. I think that there are, like I said, organizations in this community that are really connected, but may not have the capacity to serve at the level that we contract at. So maybe it's allowing them the opportunity to do the groups that they specialize in, but smaller programs.
Oh, that sounds great. The last item here is for open discussion. If we haven't covered a topic that you wanted to discuss, please bring that up now. Let me give it a wait time here for a few seconds. Okay, I'm hearing nothing, so I'm assuming that we're all good. Is that correct, everyone, that I can move on to an adjournment? Okay. Thank you for joining us today for the meeting. Thanks for all your input, and we'll adjourn the meeting for today.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.